I'm Jenna.
And I'm Jill.
And we're sisters who talk about gut health on the internet.
No, literally, we talk shit.
Because we believe that gut health is the baseline of achieving long-lasting, optimal health.
AKA making sure it's you that controls your life and not your gut.
But let's be real, health isn't always presented in the most digestible way.
So whether you're trying to get your shit together,
literally,
or just want to learn more about how to take small steps toward a healthier lifestyle, you've come to the right place.
Welcome to our Gut Talk. Boy, oh boy, do we have an amazing episode for you today. Jill and I are so excited to introduce you to Meg Gerber. She's a functional gut health dietitian, a breathwork teacher, the co-founder of Zhuzh Bitters, the bitters that Jill and I have been consuming if you've seen our social media for the past couple months that we're obsessed with. This was such an amazing conversation. We learned so much from her just in the hour that we were talking to her, and we truly left it feeling so full from the information that we received. And I'm telling you, this is one of our best episodes to date. You are going to love it. We talk about why so many women deal with constipation and how to improve it, bloating, why it's so prevalent today, and her favorite tips to decrease bloating, her favorite two B's, bitter and breathwork, and what they mean to her and how to apply them into your life, whether or not she thinks you should be consuming raw veggies, how the nervous system impacts your digestion, how to know what's right for you in the health space when there's so much noise, and truly so many other tips and tools. As I mentioned, we are such huge fans of her bitters. Bitters, as you will learn in this episode, are so amazing to start stimulating those juices to help you digest your food. So you can go in the show notes or just to her website, Zhuzh Bitters, J-U-J, and use the code GUTTALK for 10% off discount. So we are so excited for this episode. Let's just get right on into it. Here is Meg Gerber on Gut Talk.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
We're so excited.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. So fun.
So you are the founder of Zhuzh Bitters.
Zhuzh.
J-U-J. There's a lot of different pronunciations.
Say it any way you want.
But I love that because it's like judging up your water, right? That's the whole idea behind it.
Yeah, so like the name of it was really like for years as a sober curious girly.
Yeah.
But as someone who was a huge drinker in my 20s.
Yes.
I felt sort of this gap when I started to drink less of like, oh, that was a big part of my social life. I don't want to compromise the fun and the includedness by not drinking and just have the option of like air or water. I want something that's fun that like makes the bubbly water or the plain water better, make it more fun. So I always was saying zhuzh it up. Like I was always adding bitters already, adding juices and like just herbs and different things and making it better and more fun. So that's really the origin of it. But also from a more scientific perspective, definitely making your digestive secretions better, helping you absorb, break down your nutrients better, as well as blood sugar support, metabolism support, liver support, also crown jewel, which I talk about a lot with my clients, bile support. Mm-hmm. Like women need more bile support.
Yeah.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah. This is just like a lot of us have sluggish bile and it's not really talked about because in the conventional world, there is this approach where it's like, you're either this or you're that. You're healthy or you have gallstones. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, there is a whole spectrum in between. There is sludgy, sluggish, stagnant bile that happens. And it's so common for women because we work with cycling hormones that are shifting throughout our cycle constantly. Mm-hmm. And we're sometimes manipulating them. Like someone who was on birth control for 10 years of my life, where that slows things down, that causes slow stomach acid, that causes bile stagnancy. And estrogen itself concentrates cholesterol into the bile. So when you have shifts in estrogen, like specifically like women when they're pregnant, they get a lot of bile sluggishness. And a big piece of their morning sickness is actually slow bile.
Wow.
So it's just kind of interesting to think about.
That's fascinating. So I actually, not to make this about me, but let's make this
about
me.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
So I have had gut health issues. Obviously, we talk about gut health. Since we were kids, but then got into 2019, found this woman who's a practitioner, healed me. I was so great. And then I got into a really stressful environment and had what we think maybe norovirus or something along the lines. And about a year ago, like everything just kind of came back. we're literally just about to restart. Because I think something that people don't talk about is, so there's all those places in between your health, right? Of between like you're healthy and you have Crohn's or something like that, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's like if you're not diagnosed by a gastroenterologist, then you are perfectly healthy. And we know millions of Americans fall.
And many times your labs look normal, like traditional labs look normal. Right. And you're like, I don't feel normal. Yeah. And there's nothing worse than that level of not being held in your health journey.
Yes.
To be told time and time again, I feel like I'm sure we all resonate with that. Yeah. I had that. And that in itself is traumatic over time to be like, I don't feel well. I don't feel like myself. Something has shifted. And just have someone repeatedly say to you, you're fine.
Yeah. I mean, I was throwing up multiple times a week, more days than I wasn't for years. And gastroenterologists are like, you're distressed. You need to go on an antidepressant. I'm like,
oh yeah.
No, that can't be it, right? So, I mean, that's really why we started all of this, but my gut health issues have come back and you have to be in the right headspace to heal.
Oh yeah.
Right? And Jen and I have talked about it, like over the past year, it's dating, it's new job,
totally.
It's life events, it's all these things. And it's like, if you're not in the right space and really willing to do the work, you end up where I'm at now, which is like this halfway point of my symptoms are not horrific, but I really do believe that your gut is the baseline of your health.
Yeah.
And so one, what are the things we can do to judge up things that makes it fun, right? Because Jenna's like, you're going to have to give up alcohol for 3 months. And I'm like, I'm ready.
So yeah, when I was in my 20s and I got diagnosed with celiac disease in 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I, similar to you, I basically was like a constipated kid, struggled with constipation most of my life. Ended up, even once I was in dietetic school, I was like, oh my God, I'm just like harder to heal than the typical person. Mm-hmm. And still, after having like expertise in functional medicine for many years, was like, I'm my hardest to heal client. Like it was just the story I was telling myself. Mm-hmm. So in my 20s, I actually felt like bitters were my dirty little secret. Like I was already like spritzing them into my mouth or bringing them to the bar, still drinking copious amounts at times, but found that that was just like helping me feel less bloated because I was so bloated constantly at a baseline, mainly because I was like not emptying my bowels normally. I mean, that's like one of the biggest root causes that I see in clients when it comes to bloating is definitely like incomplete bowel movements, like constipation.
How often would you say you were pooping when you were super constipated?
It was very normal for me to skip a day or two.
Wow.
I wasn't the person who was like going a full week and not going, but like I work with clients like that. And we are like immediately within a couple of days getting them pooping. That is like a priority for
me. Because of bitters along with other things, do you feel like bitters helps the pooping?
Definitely bitters help. So what bitters are doing is they're enhancing your own innate digestive secretion output. So when we think about even saliva output in the mouth, when you first put food into your mouth, you're starting the digestive process there, really with salivary enzymes to start to break down carbohydrate. Then in the stomach, we're outputting stomach acid, which really to me is kind of the leader of the symphony because that's going to trickle down and trigger so many other processes. So if that's suboptimal starting out, which is common for a lot of people, it really mucks up pancreatic enzyme output, insulin output, and then even bile output as well. So think of it as it's not replacing anything. It's like gently knocking on the door of what you already have and saying, hey guys, let's get ready. Like, let's get going for a meal, which if we think about like the history of bitters, typically, bitter plants or bitter leaves were part of the pre-meal like food. Like you would have a salad with some bitter leaves that would start the digestive processes. Like that was kind of like historically how bitters were used and really made sense primally. Obviously, like we now don't have the bitter leaves or people aren't choosing bitter greens as often, but we still have some like radicchio and dandelion greens and arugula, things like that.
I love arugula.
We love I'm a big arugula girly too. I love it. So yes, I think that because digestive insufficiency and like specifically that breakdown process is a root cause problem in a lot of people, especially women who struggle with things like overgrowth or irritation or inflammation, that's oftentimes one of the big roots. And so if we can enhance that process by getting things flowing and moving and really triggering the cleaning wave of the gut. Mm-hmm. So bitters help with that motility cleaning wave as well, along with helping with blood sugar balance too. So I've always used them mainly for the bloat and digestive effects because, of course, if food is sitting longer than it should, kind of like the trash that hasn't been taken out for days or partially broken down proteins, for example, you're going to feel more bloated. You're probably going to be burping up more like stinky, smelly burps, or you may deal with more just like gas as well. So I actually have a blog on my website where I talk about like the six red flag signs to look for, because like some level of gas is normal, but right. when it's like life disruptive and smelly, like I always tell people, if people in your environment, like partners and friends and family, are letting you know, like that is disrupting their life, right. then like there's something that we need to do
it's
there.
So yeah. True.
No, it's so interesting because right now I'm burping a ton and Jenna's like, Jill, this isn't normal. But sometimes when you're in a place of sickness, not like short term, but like long term, you get so used to your symptoms that you don't realize how often for me I'm burping. And then Jenna will be like, you just burped 5 times in 3 minutes. And I'm like, oh yeah, I did. Cause you know what I mean? You kind of, I'm sure you've done that where it's like, oh, I haven't pooped today. Like I have a very regular poop schedule. And
yes.
I love that about myself.
I love that for you. I love it for me.
Right. Like, and when I don't poop, I'm like a different
What's
person.
What's going on?
Well, yeah. Right. And that's what you're saying is a lot of the reason why people are bloated is because of that stagnancy and the inability to evacuate everything that you're putting into your mouth,
right?
You know,
yes.
Well, and what I was going to say is
the leftovers.
Jenna had a lot of issues with bloating and constipation.
Yeah,
and I would be literally upset for her when she wasn't pooping because her bloat was so strong that she like wouldn't be able to button her jeans, and I would feel that for her. So you're right; it's like the people in your life are almost experiencing a lot of these issues with you.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And I think what you're bringing up too that I love that you're being transparent about is sometimes for those of us who have struggled a lot of our lives with gut issues, I think it's important to like, yes, we get to rewrite the story that like we don't have to be a person who has gut issues forever, and honoring sometimes that there are seasons to it. Like you have a stressful episode, you have food poisoning, for example, which like we know now that food poisoning is one of the biggest root causes behind SIBO. It actually does something to the migrating motor complex. So the cleaning wave of the gut has these little nerve cells where it creates this almost self-attacking self response because the antigens or the bacterial antigens in that food poisoning look really similar to the antigen in the nerve cells of that cleaning wave. So we now know that like when people like go to Mexico, get food poisoning, for example, it's very common that a few months later, 6 to 12 months, they're getting some kind of a like relapse in symptoms if they're prone to symptoms or a totally new episode of overgrowth and all of the symptoms that tend to come with that, like bloating, like gas, like discomfort, like visceral hypersensitivity, we call. So just kind of like also helpful to note that like I've experienced this in my own journey that like things aren't always perfectly linear, but the beauty of, you know, connecting with yourself is that it's like, okay, I can do this. I know that I've done it before. Mm-hmm. I have the tools to come back to. And it is also why for me, I am very passionate about the nervous system component of healing and things like breath work and somatic work, because you can't heal a body that is living in that like hypervigilant fight or flight stress mode that a lot of us kind of know as just a normal. I know for me, like I was just kind of buzzing at that normal of fight or flight, then eventually sort of in this like freeze zone. And the body doesn't open to the healing magic of the supplements, the foods. I've seen it in my own life, the same supplement protocol work differently in a different season of my life when I was looking at that big picture. Mm. And something I always like to remind clients, because I think as women in the society we live in now, it's so easy to be punishing, to be angry at, to be rejecting of our bodies. There's an opportunity there for us to be even in, maybe it's not immediately jump to self-love, because that's kind of a large jump, I feel. But can we start to like hold ourselves and see ourselves a little bit differently? Mm. Like, oh my gosh, you've been through a lot.
Yeah.
Like, let me just be here with what's happening without trying to fix it in this exact moment. Yeah. Can I just be here to breathe and be with it and listen to the signals you're giving me? Because those are wisdom signals. I do think that like that piece, like that stress narrative that we tell ourselves does make a difference in allowing the body to like kind of exhale and open to the healing. Because I know for me, like, I was fighting myself. I was mad. I was like, why are you like this? You're trying to date. Why do you feel this way? Yeah. Like, why do you look like that? There's so much like anger that I was experiencing. And so that's where the practices of presence, like breath, like mindfulness, or for me, like, I love using things like mantras to just ground me back into the here and now.
Yeah.
To kind of stabilize some of that.
I love that. No, it totally does.
I looked over at Jill because I think such a big part we have noticed on our journeys is that lack of regulation in our nervous system. And I know that's a topic that a lot of people are starting to talk more about, which I love. It's interesting because we can trace back our gut issues, our worst gut issues, and the ones that we're kind of experiencing now, mainly Jill, but I've had a couple of issues myself, to like a very stressed out, tense body, stressful jobs, stressful relationships, stressful
moves,
places that you live in. And so I want to talk about that nervous system aspect and breath work. But before, I want to talk a little bit more about bloating, because bloating, we talked about the constipation aspect, but bloating is so prevalent these days.
Totally.
It seems like every person I talk to, or I'm sure, as you know, being on social media, it's always, I'm so bloated, what do I do about it? So first, I want to start with you. When you're working with clients, what you see with them and within yourself, what are these underlying causes when it comes to bloating?
Yeah. So biggest one is definitely the constipation or incomplete emptying. So for some people, they're pooping every day, but they're not like completely emptying. Oftentimes there's a pelvic floor or more physical aspect to that. So what I mean by that, this was big in my journey. So I had appendicitis, I got an appendectomy. I had like three different incisions from that. Common that a lot of women either have physical or emotional trauma in that area by the time you get into like 30s, 40s, or even 20s, where that can leave an imprint or what we call an adhesion. So essentially you have scar tissue that can form in that area when you have a surgery, or if you've had some kind of abuse or trauma to that area, like that does leave an imprint. And that can cause a stagnancy in the proper flowing and the proper movement of the valves that are just in the functionality of like the intestinal tract. So for some people, especially if they're having a hard time like fully emptying, or there's like difficult to pass bowel movements, there can be a component of working with a pelvic floor PT or a visceral therapist to dig a little bit deeper. And I commonly have clients who are working with me and working with a practitioner like that to just sort of like bring the microbiome piece and the physical piece as well. In the category of stress, I think one thing that resonates for a lot of people is just how you eat is a big player in the bloating, even beyond just the foods. Because I think, especially on social media, there's a big focus on like seed oils and hyper-processed foods. And definitely like we want to talk about that. But I'm also big on like not adding more stress to the system by creating a bunch of fear around things. I always like to start with the how. So I start every client talking about my rule of threes, which is my breathwork practice at mealtimes to kind of drive you into the present moment. It's three deep breaths, three times per meal. You don't need to do anything fancy. You could do it eating out or on a date. I love to tell people like get your friends or family involved, because it's just a nice practice and sort of like getting brain involved with body. Because how much of our day are we disconnected from that? Like we're living in autopilot mode. We're driving our car and we're like, what am I going to eat later? Or what do I need at the grocery store? Or what am I going to say to this person who I have feelings towards? Like really the practice is in like, how can we bring both back together? And so scientifically what we're doing is we're really engaging the cephalic phase of eating, which is the brain phase of eating, that actually upregulates digestive juice secretion by 20%. Like that is what the research says. And that's fun because I love to say as the most accessible way to support bloat and support just like helping your body digest and absorb food better is bitters and breath, because pretty accessible, pretty inexpensive to just have that combination of like taking bitters before you eat or having bitter foods. And then also doing the three deep breaths, because it's the continual coming back to breath and taking pause. And it's a practice. I tell people, I'm like, it's not a perfect, it's a breathwork practice. So you're going to forget, come back, like just keep coming back. You are going to have plenty of meals to practice that. So Those are kind of like some of the big ones that I see, but also just improper chewing or lack of attention to chewing. Even something like smoothies, or the fact that like coffee drinks and matcha and like all that stuff is really big right now, which not a bad thing, but I always like to be mindful of people who are bloated that, like, again, we want to get the brain involved and give it time to catch up. And so if we're getting up in the morning and we're rushing and we're sucking down a smoothie, your body's like, what? Like, there's all this liquid, but like, I didn't even have time to prepare.
Yeah.
This is something I was talking about on my Instagram yesterday, is just like these spaces in between where, like, of course, like, we can't all have this like Zen Buddha of a day, but if you can just have like a little more transition time of like, we get up in the morning, give yourself a little time to wake up. Maybe you meditate before you do your workout, or you do a warm up before the workout. You do a little warm up before you eat. It's like these little moments that, like, that in itself is nervous system training. That is toning to the vagus nerve to really reteach safety, where a body has maybe become dysregulated with that safety muscle of like, am I in danger or am I in safety? Because you're constantly just like, go, go, go in rush mode.
Yeah, I love that. We're all about the tips that are free and the tips that are practical.
Yeah.
You can take deep breaths wherever you are.
Totally.
And you can also, like, consuming your little tincture of bitters. I love it. It's so cute. We live in a world today where bringing out like an aesthetically pleasing bottle of bitters is cute. Right?
It's fun.
I love it.
I love that you guys are saying that, because we were big on the branding and the aesthetics.
Oh, you nailed
that. That's like where we spent the money. Yes. Right. So we were like, this needs to look, and it needs to look gender neutral. Like, it just needs to be like accessible, but like minimalist, but like something people would want to have on their dinner table or like out at a restaurant and not feel like it's weird that they're enhancing their digestion.
Right. Well, because we have some like digestive enzymes and butyrate and things like that.
Yeah.
And they're in these like really big clunky plastic bottles, which are really hard to fit in your purse.
Yes.
But also too, like, when you're bringing them out, it's like, ha ha. Like, I mean, we kind of don't care, but still, like, if you're at a nice restaurant, it's so much easier to just a little tincture. Drop. Yeah. So, you know, we're not being told to say this. I really do believe it. So,
I
love that. Because part of like our big mission is we have to make gut health more digestible. And part of being digestible is like practical. Right? Yeah. Like, being realistic. I'm not going to do a 9-step routine before I eat my meal, especially when I'm starving.
Yeah.
But I can take 3 deep breaths and consume some bitters.
Totally.
Right? Like, it's all about like making this doable and sustainable, which I mean, it sounds like that's a really big part of your practice, which I love.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love to always say, you're not a textbook, you're a human. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I have gathered all this knowledge over my last 10 years of being in this field. And I'm working with humans. So I want to make sure that it's realistic. Like, I am constantly asking my clients, how does that feel for you? Is that doable? Because, like, I don't like the feeling of just having someone shovel a bunch of advice in me and then being like, okay, go off on your way, you robot. Right.
Yeah. What else are you seeing? So obviously, I'm assuming a lot of your clients are probably just in the stressed out state. They're not paying attention to their eating. Do you also see a lot dietary where you're like, whoa, like, we're just not thinking about food the right way? And can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So there's definitely, like, especially in the bloating camp, things that can cause more bloat. And I think what is a common phenomenon that I see for a lot of women is skipping meals, unconsciously under eating, especially if you have gut issues, because most people are like, oh, I just like feel better when I eat less. It's not a sustainable solution. It's a signal for us to look at, like, why? Why is that happening? Because you deserve to be fueled. And eating breakfast specifically, which, like, I feel like we all kind of grew up in the time where it was like keto was big and like intermittent fasting. And I definitely was in that camp for a while, and it just dysregulated the heck out of me. Skipping breakfast is a biggie, especially if you're constipated, because when you eat in the morning, it stretches your stomach and it signals something called your gastrocolic reflex, which basically tells the lower intestines to empty. Like, it literally sends a signal that's like, let's move. So if we're constantly skipping, or we're just kind of like living on a coffee in the morning, not only is that spiking cortisol signaling to the body, like, I'm not safe, we're not going to be in rest and digest mode, but also there's sort of that like metabolic influence and then digestive influence as well. What I'll also say, and this feels like it kind of bothers some people, is eating just like copious amounts of vegetables, especially raw vegetables, can be super amplifying to digestive symptoms. So I am actually really big on incorporating animal proteins as a part of your meals and being intentional with, yes, vegetables and fiber, but people who struggle with more bloat or autoimmune need to be eating mostly cooked vegetables. Mm-hmm. Like, you are increasing the bioavailability of those because you're going to absorb more of that vegetable.
Yeah.
And the goal is not, you know, I think something that I see sometimes is clients who are thinking about like estrogen detox, for example, they're like, I'm estrogen dominant. I need cruciferous veggies. Mm-hmm. I had a client recently working with me who was eating like 3 cups of crucifers at a meal. And it's like,
wow,
that's just too much right. to have like 3 cups of broccoli at your meal. Like, yeah. you don't need that. It's supportive to eat vegetables, but it is about sort of a balance of those macronutrients where like, we do need enough protein. We need enough carbs. Like, I think it's common that a lot of women undereat carbs and kind of undernourish in general. Carbs create safety. They literally help bring cortisol down. And for a lot of us who are in that like preconception camp, you want to be having intentional carbs throughout the day, not only for some sources of like resistance starch and prebiotic fiber that you get through like white potato or white rice, but also to create some of that cortisol calming safety. And this also is a little shape shifty depending on parts of your cycle. Like, I find that women need a little bit more attention to carbs in their luteal phase. Mm-hmm. So if you like do struggle in that phase with like dysregulated sleep or you're waking up in the middle of the night, big loud signal that we need more carbs at the evening meal.
Yeah.
So that's a blood sugar like drop in the middle of the night.
It's so funny. Yeah. I love all of that.
I'm obsessed.
one of the things that I think are, not to be controversial, but I think one of the biggest scams in today's world are the superfood packed smoothies, the like $19 smoothie. And it has kale and spinach, like you just said, the raw vegetables.
Your body's just like, what?
Yeah. Right. And then you're throwing in all these like, what do you call them? Not superfoods.
Yeah.
And then you have—
In quotes.
Right. And then you have a nut milk, which nuts can also be relatively disruptive.
They can dysregulate people for sure.
And then that's if you have a really high quality nut or alternative milk. But what happens when they're not high quality? Then it's even worse. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, you're paying $19 for like a massive stomach ache, you know?
Totally. And what I always tell people is like, I'm not anti-smoothie, but I will say like, I had smoothies as a big part of my life when I was early in my journey. And when I started eating more chewable breakfast, most of the time made a huge difference in my bowel movements and how my body felt and bloating. So with smoothies, just something to always think about is eating them out of a bowl with a spoon, putting toppings and keeping, like you're saying, I love what you said, like keep the ingredients simple. Mm-hmm. Like you don't need to have so many freaking things in there. Right. It's exactly how I feel with people who are taking like adaptogens that have like a million things or even like AG1, like hate to say that, but like, I'm not a huge fan of that company because nothing is in high potency when it's that much going into it. And I'm really big on intentionality with supplements. Like, I want to know that this thing is going to have this outcome and that's why we're taking it versus just like taking all the things and all the combinations of herbs or what have you.
Yeah.
Because then your body's like, I don't know what to do with this thing. There's too many things.
You know, I think it's interesting you say that because I think AG1 has fit perfectly into what our society is today, which Jen and I used to drink them. We've both stopped for different reasons. We love a lot of the people at the company, but to just kind of go off of what you were saying, AG1 is the one-stop shop, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of advertised by people like Joe Rogan
that
it's where you get all my vitamins. I get all my minerals. I'm getting all the things that I'm missing from my diet. But you're kind of saying like, hey, like there can't be a one-stop shop. And
it's bio-individual.
Right.
Like even for a woman who's like, we both have celiac and we both have IBS and we're both trying to conceive in 2 years, you're still going to have different things on your list.
Yeah.
Like it's just, you know, there are some wide-reaching things like breath. And for example, it's why I launched a Bitters company because I wanted to find something that was massively accessible to most people and helps most people. That being said, I also am intentional about saying on our website who it's not for. It's not for someone with gallstones. It's not for someone with kidney stones. Mm. It's not for someone with hiatal hernia. So like, any of us should have a red flag out for companies that say like, this is just good for everybody, no doubt.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good point. It is really where a lot of our society has gone today with there's a lot of pills and supplements and things out here that are like, for instance, for bloating, right? There's a lot of bloating supplements out there. And
oh, I think we should talk about this.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get into it then. Go ahead, Jenny.
I like to say it as there's so much noise, right?
Yes.
So many different advertisements, marketing. There's always an option out there for anyone. Let's chat about it. People listening to this podcast right now are the women, our community. How do we decipher like what's good for us and what's not? Mm-hmm. Should we be eating 3 different veggies a day like Dr. Hyman says? Or should we be taking these bloat array capsules like they advertise to us? Mm-hmm. How do we know?
So I have a long answer that I'm going to try to like make more concise. So first of all, what I feel really passionate about is starting ground is getting in tune with yourself. Because I think a lot of us, like in the millennial camp and some in the Gen Z camp, a lot of us grew up kind of being taught to be disconnected from our body, suppress emotion, don't feel your emotions, just do these things, check these boxes, go to college, you're supposed to do this. Mm-hmm. We weren't always taught. I think some people were, but like, I know in my family, like I didn't have that approach of learning, like, how do I tune into myself and what I really need? Mm-hmm. How do I take in all of this knowledge and then discern and be like, I get to decide for myself, what do I need for my body? And I get to listen. I think there's a lot of power in that. So I still always come back to presence and mindfulness. And like for me, this sometimes just looks like when I'm feeling overwhelmed, because I feel overwhelmed even as a practitioner, there's so much stuff coming in. There's always new research. I like to just take hand to heart, close my eyes and just listen and be like, what am I feeling right now? Where are you at right now? How are you? Just like simple little, can I tune into my heartbeat? Like pausing for a second, because when we can start to come into our bodies and trusting ourselves, then we can try something and see how it feels. I think that it's hard sometimes for some women to be like, I don't know how things feel, or like, I don't know if I like that or not, because I'm not in tune with my body. So step one is some level of tuning in. And that even could be your breath work at meals. That could just be like that little pause where we're like, I'm in process of getting more connected with myself. Because then you have the ability to try something on for size. Like, for example, I know when I have like the foods or the drinks that have like poppy, like the things that have like the fibers in them, my body is like, no way. Like that just feels super bloating to me. Like it's literally 9 grams of liquid fiber where my body's like, you didn't chew that. What is going on right now? Right.
Lollipop.
And yeah, that's my body. Mm-hmm. I also honor that. Like that's not everybody's body. Cool. But just helpful, because then you can kind of learn and listen from yourself and be like, cool, thank you for your wisdom. Doesn't work for me. This is also where, like, obviously I'm passionate about someone working with a partner, like partnering with a practitioner so that they can help with their knowledge and you, the expert of your body, partner together and like really look at what's helping, what's not. Because I'll give you guys a really good example. So when someone's working on gut repair or say they need gut soothing, it's really common to recommend things like slippery elm or aloe or DGL, deglycerinated licorice. Now, those are fermentable. So for somebody who has SIBO going on as a background noise of a root cause, they're going to feel extra bloaty. Similar with collagen. So collagen, yes, like rich in proline, glycine, alanine, super helpful for literal tissue repair. So I love thinking about it for people who have gut damage, intestinal permeability, autoimmune, even women coming out of like postpartum, like tissue healing, great. Athletes, great. But it has hyaluronic acid in it, fermentable. So some people take collagen and they're like, but social media is telling me I need to have collagen and like I should take it, right? Like I've been taking it for a year, but I feel bloated every time I take it. I'm like, interesting. Your body is giving you a signal. Like, thanks, body. Like there's a reason for that.
Right. It's feedback.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. I think there's such a lack of trust. I mean, the DMs that we get, it will be like, I tried this probiotic that you love or recommend. Yeah. Just Thrive is a probiotic that I love, spore based, but I felt really bad after it. And I'm like, and it's like, what do I do? Mm. And that's the perfect example of when it's time to trust yourself and not outsource to your favorite health influencer or dietitian or whatever whoever the person is. Because I think if something's not working for you and it really doesn't feel good, to not force yourself to continue to take it.
Totally.
And that aspect of trust, I love that you said that, I think is truly what is going to be the catalyst to people understanding themselves, what they should be putting into their bodies. And it's really interesting concept to me because Jill and I were those people who were very vulnerable. I followed the 1200 calorie diet before, just like you. I feel like we can speak for a lot of women.
Totally.
How many of us, or you listening at home, have tried just a diet because you were influenced by someone who said, this is going to change your life. This is going to make you lose 15 pounds. So that aspect of trust, I really love. I think it's important.
And like, no knock on women. Like, I'm like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
You feel crappy. Like, you're literally throwing the darts because you're like, I want to feel well.
Yep.
So I hold a lot of space and love for that person because that was me for so long.
Yeah.
But the beauty of kind of getting into that presence and trust is like, again, it puts you in that light of how do I hold myself and work with myself and partner with it? Because you get to kind of explore what it feels like to be like, oh, cool, that was a signal. Like, interesting, that was information versus like, why the hell are you bloated again?
Yeah.
You know, like the energy shifts.
When you have a new client, how do you start off with them? Like, what are you looking at? What type of testing are you conducting? How do you get that baseline to understand how to even start?
Any new client, we typically have a free call first. So I'm kind of feeling out, making sure that they're a good feel, like a good fit for my practice and vice versa. Like for me, it needs to be a match. Mm-hmm. And I always want people to feel like it's a full body yes and see the excitement that I see for them of like what's possible.
Yeah.
We always start out typically with a stool test. Mm-hmm. So usually a DNA PCR stool test. And that always gives me just sort of a good look, but ultimately like a reaffirmation of what my clinical expertise is already thinking. Like 9 times out of 10, I'm already kind of like, okay, we've got nervous system dysregulation. We need vagal nerve toning. We've got traumatic brain injury that's playing a role with the gut-brain connection. We've potentially got candida going on in the background. Like, I like to kind of get that buzzing and moving first while we're waiting on the results. And then we bring in that testing. Mm-hmm. And then depending on the client's needs, more times than not, I'm doing HTMA hair mineral testing. Are you guys familiar? Mm-hmm. Because minerals are like the spark plugs to your body. They turn the lights on. And I have found 9 times out of 10, like especially when we were talking about that like spectrum with gallstones, the spectrum when it comes to metabolism and thyroid, like so many women are like, I have low thyroid, and it's actually really subclinical hypothyroidism secondary to low minerals that are fueling the thyroid. So if you don't have the potassium, the iron, selenium, et cetera, on board to fuel the thyroid, it's going to be sluggish.
Yeah.
So I like to start there for most women just because also a lot of women have been on birth control. A lot of them have dealt with a lot of stress, and both of those things just tend to deplete the heck out of minerals. In addition, the status of our soil. So we don't have the innate mineral capacity that like our parents had even 20 years ago when monocrop agriculture and glyphosate spraying started really massively like 20 years ago or so. It totally changed the landscape of the microbiome density to the soil. And so when you lose that, you lose the mineral density that then translates to the food system. Mm-hmm. So we're just kind of like, not to be the bearer of bad news, but we're starting a little behind the eight ball with just like our food system in this country, which is why a lot of us do need like a little extra support. It's why I'm insanely passionate about minerals, mineral mocktails. I know you guys are too, like foundational for stress.
Yeah. You touched on birth control and you're saying like, is it after women get off birth control that you see the mineral deficiencies or while they're on it or both?
Both.
Okay.
So it depends how long you've been taking it. But usually if a woman has been on birth control for anywhere around a year plus, especially if it's compounded with GI issues, which already are like potentially putting them behind the eight ball with absorption, then I have a red flag out for mineral deficiency, as well as definitely B vitamins. Some for some women, iron. Iron is complex. So for me, when I'm thinking about iron, I actually am, and this feels controversial for some people, I rarely supplement iron. I'm big on vitamin A and copper. You guys probably know this. Like, that's why I mineral test, because I want to get that full picture, ideally an iron panel plus a mineral panel. Because if we don't have the vitamin A and copper, which is kind of like the little roller coaster ride that brings the iron to the tissue to oxygenate the tissue, then like you don't want to just give somebody more iron. It's going to accumulate in the tissues, which causes way more oxidative stress.
It was so funny. Someone was asking me yesterday, how do I get started with my gut health? Mm. And I'm not a practitioner. I'm just along for the ride here, but we've obviously sat down for so many of these conversations and yeah. we do our own research. And I'm at the point where I'm like, to me, it doesn't make sense to not test first, because why just start trying a bunch of minerals or a bunch of supplements or a special diet or whatever it may be when you don't know where your body's at and like how to react? Would you agree that you feel like most people need some sort of testing?
Somewhat. Okay. I agree somewhat.
Okay.
Because I do think depending on the person, again, this is sort of where the art meets the science. Like, am I starting everyone on minerals out of the gate? No, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of cases, I am. Like, I usually am starting with some level of breath initially, some level of a presence practice, some level of mineral repletion. We usually start with the testing. And then I may start to just like, let's gather information. How are you talking to your body? Let's gather information. What are your meals looking like? What's the portions? Like, that's usually my initial go. But I do tend to bring in like, we have items on the to-do list before we get the testing back, because I do always want to remind people that symptoms to me are more powerful than the data. Mm. Both is incredibly like the ideal creme de la creme.
Yeah.
But I also am like, for example, if someone is on a SIBO protocol, symptoms totally resolve, they feel so much better. In more cases than not, I'm like, save your money, go on your way. You're done here.
Yeah.
Like, glad you feel great. Because I do find for some people who have had a chronic health journey, the data is a nervous system trigger.
Yeah.
So it's something that I like to be mindful of, because I've seen this in my own life where it's not that we want to ignore data, but like, if you feel well and vibrant, like, great.
Right.
Go live your life.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding properly. So what you're saying is that if you understand your symptoms and you understand almost like what your struggle is, then maybe testing is not necessary, because we're just going to listen to those symptoms and treat those symptoms. And with your expertise, I'm not saying do this on your own, but with your expertise, then you can kind of start a treatment plan, and testing's not always necessary.
You can get started.
Okay.
And
yes,
all of my new clients do a stool test.
Sure, sure, sure.
So that's, I'm one to meld it,
yeah,
but I don't wait for the testing to start things.
Right.
If yes, that makes sense.
There's things you can do that are going to be good for you regardless, yeah, of what shows up on the stool test.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, well, there's that a lot of aspects to, let's say, foundational health, right?
Exactly.
Where you're talking about breath work, sleep,
circadian rhythm,
things like that, sunshine, like many of us are hiding in our houses looking at our blue light,
yep,
screens all the time. So yeah, I think we're getting the idea, but it is different if you're someone who wants to go work with a practitioner. There's going to be, you know, that aspect of let's start with the foundations, but let's also gather the data to see where you're
100%.
At.
100%. You hit the nail on the head.
Well, and so there's two things about birth control that I want to just ask you. One is for the girlies that are on birth control, because both of us got off quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
I saw a ton of post-birth control symptoms.
Yeah.
Tons.
Same.
Didn't know at the time, though. For the girlies that are on birth control, I think sometimes there's so much noise around getting off of it, but there are some people where that's not their journey. So if someone is on birth control, what do you recommend, what steps to take or whatever it may be to help support their bodies while they're on birth control?
Totally. Because I want to honor that, like,
right,
for some people it's a non-negotiable and they're,
exactly,
like, I need to do this or I'm going to be anxious, yeah, every,
right,
day of my life.
Right.
And I'm like, well, and that's not helping,
right,
your gut.
Please, by all means.
So yes. And I've had clients like that where we work with it and we replete those vitamins and minerals that tend to be deficient. So again, this is like something where I'm pretty passionate about not using multivitamins. I really like to be, again, intentional at kind of building a multivitamin individually with like different supplements together, just to get a level of potency, but also because a lot of multivitamins have iron and I don't like to just massively supplement iron. So usually I'm working on like B vitamins, looking at minerals, probably looking at some fat soluble vitamins or something like a cod liver oil as well, or beef liver, to sort of like create a pseudo multivite, just because that woman will need more than,
yeah,
like potentially the typical person.
Right. So if they don't have the mineral testing, is there anything across the board that you like that are pretty like general, or does it really have to be something that's catered to your individual body?
Good question. I would say across the board, as like a general broad spectrum, that like I feel safe recommending. But
and
also,
this is not medical advice, right?
Yeah.
This is just like, knowledge.
Tune into your body. Check with your practitioner. I do really like the Quinton seawater minerals. So they come in these little glass ampules. They're probably top of the market in terms of like a trace mineral product.
Yeah, I've tried it before. They're awesome.
Super salty. Like you will notice that you feel really good. So those are like a great just like baseline mineral product along with. So I always start with the macro minerals. The four are sodium, potassium, magnesium, and calcium. Most of the time, again, similar to iron, I don't supplement calcium too much in the heart health camp that we've seen with research on that. So I like for people to focus on food forms of dairy. So whether they're or food forms of calcium, like if they're eating dairy, if they're having bone broth, dark leafy greens. Sometimes I'm using things like eggshell powder or I'm using pearl powder. Again, depends on the client. I wouldn't say just everybody go start doing that. But with magnesium, I'm a big fan of topical magnesium. So doing things like Epsom salt baths or topical oils or lotions, like Ancient Minerals brand, because that's a gentle way to build magnesium up. And I think like a lot of people in the health space where like everyone, it's like you give them a little bit, they want to go a mile. People are taking massive amounts of magnesium without building the foundation of sodium and potassium. And I've seen this so often where if you take too much magnesium, you feel worse because it can cause a low sodium level to drop even lower. So if you're already somebody who, again, high sympathetic tone, more fight or flight, like high stress individual, you probably already have some baseline, like lower sodium, probably especially potassium, and going too high on magnesium will drop it lower because none of this works in a vacuum. It's all synergistic. So I'm a big fan of like maybe doing something like a Quinton or my mineral mocktail on my website or on my Instagram is just doing half a cup of 100% coconut water, like Harmless Harvest for potassium, doing some fresh squeeze citrus juice. So like lemon or lime or grapefruit, about a quarter of a cup, and a good quality salt, like Redmond's Real Salt pinch, fill it up with some bubbly. I love to add zhuzh. So it's like minerals meets bitters.
Yeah.
We need to make that. We'll tag you.
And that's like a great just foundation,
like daily
foundation, add in some topical magnesium, start there, listen, notice, how are you sleeping? How are you feeling? How's energy levels? Because you can always go up. Like there's no winning this race. That is always my kind of like, where do I just like start when I'm teaching minerals and I can't work with someone individually? And then I get a little more nitty gritty with people where I'm like, let's use this form of magnesium for this or for brain or for sleep or go higher on potassium, because a lot of women who are eating low carb have potassium deficiency. It's just common in like a high stress, low carb eater. Something that I get a question about a lot when it comes to sodium is, I can't have extra salt, Meg. I just get water retention. Like I feel bloated. That's a huge sign of potassium deficiency. Okay. So if you think of your cells like a little filled up grape, you want to have this proper proportion of potassium and sodium that if you're flooding things extracellularly with sodium, you're going to take and you're going to flood that extra water inside the cell and extra potassium outside of the cell. And that cell is going to become like a shriveled grape and you're going to have all this flooding in that like outside the tissues, meaning like water retention feeling. So just like something to notice with people, like to me, that's not a sign that they need less sodium. It's a sign that like we need balanced sodium and we need more potassium.
Yeah. I really want to transition into the nervous system and not necessarily going too deep into it, but I want to talk about how the nervous system impacts your digestion and how we can use breath work as a tool to, I know you've mentioned it a few times, but as a tool to improve and enhance our digestion and our experience when we're dealing with digestive issues, or if you're not dealing with digestive issues and you just want to create that parasympathetic state.
Yes, absolutely. So to kind of briefly touch on what stress does to the nervous system, it puts us in that fight, flight, or freeze, fawn state, all of which can really slow down and stagnate digestion in many ways. So we already talked about how breathing can help with enhancing digestive secretions. So just the opposite happens when you're in that sympathetic like fight or flight state, because primally your body is like, we need to flood blood to the extremities. We need to run from that tiger. It is not flooding a bunch of circulation to your internal digestive organs. So that whole system is kind of halted and primarily not needed at that moment. So you can imagine the difficulty when you're chronically just sort of like buzzing at that high stress state. Mm-hmm. So what breath does is, for free, it is the best bridge for reteaching the nervous system how to move back and forth between danger recognition and safety. Because we don't want to just say that stress mode is bad. We need that. Like, sometimes we do need that quick hit of sympathetic tone. Like, you're late for a flight, you got to run to it. Right. So we don't want to just be living in this like parasympathetic, like totally calm, turned down state. It's about the resiliency to bounce back and forth. And just like the breath work we just did, tools like that help with building that resilience muscle to really teach the body, when I'm breathing, when I'm slowing down, I can digest my food. I can upregulate that process, versus when I'm telling myself I need to run to that plane that I'm late to, we turn up circulation to the extremities. So it's like, it's just that resiliency to bounce back and forth is ultimately our goal. But breath is my favorite thing for ongoing support because it's so accessible and tangible. You bring it with you throughout every, like, threads through your life if you want it to. And it's the most underutilized tool. Like, so many people just don't have awareness. I'll say that just my personal experience with why I'm so passionate about breath is, early in my journey with celiac, I, after the diagnosis, actually got a lot worse. Even though I was told, like, you're going to just get magically better when you stop eating gluten, I got a lot worse because of the stories I was telling myself. Like, the mindset component of it was debilitating. I was like, who's going to want to date me? Who's going to want to be my friend? How am I going to go on vacation? Like, this is just going to affect every part of my life. I hate this part of me. I don't want to have this. And that just, like, made everything physically get worse.
Yeah.
So much so that I was really in this state of, like, bracing myself. I was kind of, like, teaching my body that, like, it's not safe to be you. Like, brace yourself. Cause, like, if you do eat gluten, something bad's going to happen. Like, just living in this chronic, like, tight, like, the energy of that is very, like, tight, bracing, like, fear.
Yeah.
So I was working with a functional practitioner for, like, that was, like, kind of my first experience of holistic medicine. And they were doing acupuncture on me, and they got to my abdomen and they were like, you do not know how to breathe. And at that time I was, like, so sassy. And I was like, what do you mean I'm breathing?
What do you mean? I'm alive.
And they're like, no, you have complete halt and stagnancy in that area. Like, your low belly is not even moving. So I started to get curious about that and ended up sort of, like, moving past what originally my relationship with yoga was very, like, exercise based, and then allowed me to kind of go in deeper into the breath. Because the one thing I always noticed about my symptoms is, no matter what, if I go to a yoga class, I leave the yoga class feeling better digestively. Like, my stomach pain would go away. That was kind of transformative for me, because I'm like, oh, interesting. Yoga always has breath. So kind of dove me deeper into the world of breath and getting more breathwork training and then doing meditation training. And I've since become so passionate because it's transformed even beyond the physical entities, the supplements, the working with candida and all these things that I've had in my journey. Breath and regulating my system has been the most powerful, because it's also, like, the thing that always is there, even if, like, shit hits the fan and you get a parasite when you're on vacation. It's like, cool, I can actually handle this. I actually have the tools, like, and one of my biggest tool being breath, that just gives that extra soothe and support of not only breaking things down and digesting, but moving things along. Like, it is one of the most important things for peristalsis and keeping that system moving down and out. If you're not moving things down and out daily, you feel like crap.
Yeah.
That's literally why we say you feel like,
yeah.
Can I swear on this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because we talk about poop for a living. Okay. Just one
word. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, you feel like shit because you're full of it. Like, yeah. It makes sense. So yeah, I mean, my passion for it runs so deep. And for me, so I think in Austin, breath is very accessible in a lot of ways. I don't teach the style of breath work that is known as, like, holotropic or transformative breath. I'm not against it. I definitely am here for it. It's just, it's a bit more elevated and, or I should say activating. It's a little more sympathetic tone promoting. There's total utility to it, but I find for my particular body, I do that once in a while when I'm like, I need a creative hit. I need to go in on this thing I'm struggling with, versus the styles of breathwork I teach are very parasympathetic, rest and digest, accessible to the vast majority. So it's sort of a melding of scientific, like pelvic floor approaches to breathing, along with more Buddhist, like yogic styles of breath work, melded in with mindfulness and mantra, where I kind of have just like created my own archive for clients. There's 50 plus videos on there now that I have where I just teach people different tools and styles, and all of them are calming to the system. And most of them are more nasal breath promoting, more low belly or diaphragm breath promoting, and focusing on extending the exhale, because all of those things help with stimulating more of that parasympathetic versus short, quick chest breathing. Mm-hmm. Mouth breathing is more sympathetic.
Yeah, that type of breathing I've done before, and it's truly made me feel like I was about to pass out. So it's intense, I know what you're meaning with that. And we've had a somatic expert on the podcast a nasal breathing expert, making sure like tongue is at the top of your mouth or the roof of your mouth. And that's all amazing. And just quickly, just personally speaking, I find myself literally in stressful situations. You're inspiring me to do more breathwork because I'll literally find myself like holding my breath.
Yes.
And then I'm sitting here and I'm like, I wonder why I didn't poop today.
Yeah.
And it's like, because my body is like crammed.
Hold it in.
Holding it in. And I'm full of shit.
No, you know, I really think kids need a breathwork class. Like you elementary school.
Speaking my language.
Right?
Because I am so big on this.
I coach softball. Mm. And softball is such a mental sport, right?
Yeah.
And one of my players that I train every week holds her breath when she's stressed and actually gets dizzy. And I'm like, okay, we have to, but because she's never been taught how to breathe properly. It's like, there's so much in our school system that it would be really helpful if they implemented, but I feel like breath work is one of them. We didn't even touch half the things.
This has been incredible.
Yeah. And what I love about your approach is like, I'm always here for the people that are both more classically trained, but also so open to maybe some things that don't have as much science or data.
Esoteric.
Right?
Yeah.
Like kind of combining all of these different ways of healing, because I don't feel like healing, like you said earlier, it's like not one path, right? It's like up and down, zigzag, all the things. And so we have some freebies in here today. We also have some recommendations of like, if you want testing, this is the way to go. But so much of what we just talked about, you can do starting today.
Totally.
And that's like, that's my favorite thing.
It's
always
the goal.
Yeah.
So owner, co-founder of Judge Getters.
Yes.
You have your own practice.
Yeah.
Are you taking clients?
I am.
Can you send people to you?
Yeah, you can send people to me.
Incredible.
Okay. I'm holding off on starting anybody the rest of March just for my current client load, but April I'll start people again.
Amazing.
And so Grounded Nourishment is my private practice, and I started that in 2020. And then Judge, we launched, my co-founder is my life partner as well. We launched end of last year, Judge. So, yeah.
And we have a discount code.
Yes.
Yes. I think it's Gut Talk. I'll put it in the show notes if you want to buy Bitters, which I want to send you all there because I just think they're so amazing. Use our code Gut Talk. I believe it's 15% off.
I think so. That's awful. I should have the answer to that.
I mean, I'll need to know. So we'll refresh.
We'll put it in the show notes for you to go check it out. And Meg, thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you, ladies.
Truly,
this was so fun.
Amazing.
Yeah, so fun. Great. We could talk for hours.
Yeah, seriously.
I know. I'm like, we might need you to come back.
I would love.